Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
For the record, KD will soar in with a right hand spike.
Klay Thompson, three.
Welcome to the Warriors Insider Podcast on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, Golden State Warriors insider, Monty Poole.
Hi, I'm Monty Poole with the Warriors Insider Podcast with Kareth Burke. Say hi, Kareth.
Hello.
Kareth, you've been around this team now for roughly a month. And I'm kind of curious about your observations. I mean, we know what we see when they play. We know what we see on the court, the shooting, the defense that they've really kind of rediscovered. We can see why they are the defending NBA champions. But what I'm curious about is kind of what you've seen from these guys away from the court of basketball. I mean, what kind of vibe are you picking up around this team and this coaching staff as far as life beyond basketball?
Yeah, I think that they have that. You know, like they devote so much of their lives to being on the court that you can tell that they have other things that are going on. Like I'm really impressed that KD was on the cover of Fast Company, or like Steph Curry is at his wife's restaurant opening, or I don't know, like there's all sorts of examples like that, that they have healthy lives outside of basketball. So when they return to basketball, you know, that's their job and they're very good at it. But yeah, I guess I'm impressed by so many things with this team,
right.
And I don't want to sound like a giant homer, but
that's
the
okay.
All,
you got to go by what you see and what you feel.
That's what I see. Yeah, that's what I see.
And you know, Steph Curry did a recent commentary on the Players Tribune for Veterans Day, where he essentially said several things. One, he says, you know, I have a platform. A, B. There are things that I stand for, and there are things that I stand against. And C, you know, he expanded his thoughts and his basically made a plea for better treatment of veterans. Based on what you know of Steph, surprising at all?
Surprising, no. And I was really struck by the part where he said, "I can't be silent anymore."
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell, you know, these guys. You can tell that they're all very firm in their opinions for things that they will and will not tolerate, but that doesn't mean they're in the mood all the time to blast those things out on Twitter or take those conversations public beyond what they have amongst themselves and with their families. But also, the culture in our country right now is one where when they have this type of platform, you know, they can, somebody like Steph writing that Players Tribune piece, it was really level-headed, and you don't necessarily need to agree with him, but I hope you read it and appreciate where he's coming from. You can see him grasping for common ground. Like, you can really see him trying to be a uniter on a topic that has been divisive. You know, the idea that these protests, the taking a knee, is somehow disrespecting our military, and Steph really explained why, you know, that's not the case. So yeah, I think you see more of, I wouldn't call it more of an awakening, because I would imagine Steph or Draymond or Steve have always felt a certain way about certain things, but now they might feel more of an obligation to speak out about it, and that's really powerful.
Yeah, you know, we talk about, I mean, Steph has long been involved in various social causes. I know that he still donates to local communities in terms of food and personal care items and stuff. And he's been doing that for a long time. He still does his Nothing But Nets, where he provides mosquito nets in Africa. And the thing is, on this team, he's not the only one. I mean, Steve Kerr is constantly, almost always when asked about issues beyond basketball, whether it's politics, racism, sexism, diversity, he's a willing discusser on these issues. And, we're around sometimes where some sports and some coaches and some players don't want to talk about these things. To be around a team that seems to be open to these discussions, what's that like?
Well, the Warriors are a global phenomenon, and I think they realize the power that they have. And sometimes, I mean, maybe that power smacks you in the face, too, because when Steph Curry says, you know, I don't want to go to the White House. We're going to talk about it at the team, but I don't want to do this. This administration doesn't stand for what I stand for. And then the President of the United States responds to that. That's got to be like a whoa moment, and how the president responded to that with the, well, you're disinvited anyway. You know what I mean? Like, that's some schoolyard weird stuff. So yeah. I imagine there's the players, you know, it takes courage to speak out when you can have a wave of backlash and trolling against you. I mean, that's really stark at how big this became. It was a national storyline. Yeah. I mean, there's some responsibility and weight that comes with this, but I see the players wanting to take that on and speak out about things.
Yeah, I thought in Steph's piece in the Players Tribune, he even talked about the surprise that he got, that the president really tweeted about him, you know, and that, you know, his name was actually a name. He was named as part of the Republican Party's tax proposal. They named him by name.
Yeah, he was the only person named in that, and he was, you know, the millionaire example of people who get to skate by on taxes or something like that.
But, yeah.
That's the whole Steve's bike shop jokes. You know, I think Steph handled that really well with humor and sort of some amusement. Credit to him there.
Have you been able to get a feel for, we talked to Steve Kerr, about Stephen Curry's piece in the Players Tribune. But, have you been able to spend much time or even have a brief conversation with Steve about things that don't have anything to do with basketball, such as social issues that we talk about?
A little bit. I would really like to pick his brain more. And he's so giving with those positions, too. Not every coach wants to open the door to his brain when it comes to that stuff. I was really thankful when he said a few words about the shooting in Texas. I mean, he has powerful, emotional, smart things to say about gun violence. I think everybody knows his background and why he deserves to speak about things that have touched his life intimately. So, yeah, all of them. I would love to sit and talk to all of them about this kind of stuff. And you know what? If I could, Steph Curry's piece got to me because this is something I wanted to say on Twitter and just held back because it was a work night, but it's sort of like the veterans aren't all one thing, right?
Right.
They're young and old. It's multicultural. Like, and if you want to, I guess what group is one big blob of agreement, right? If you say it disrespects the troops, well, it's like, well, what troops are you talking about? They're all they're all different. I don't know that a group agrees on anything. So it's sort of like, the idea that a protest can disrespect the freedoms that the troops fought for, like, well, it is American to use the freedoms that we have in this country. I do believe that protest is patriotic, and I feel like using the troops as an example in any sort of argument, like the troops are one blob of agreement, is just tokenism to prove your own prejudices, you know? And I don't like that the troops are fodder in an argument. I don't care for that at all.
Yeah, it's
Thank
wrong.
You. Thank you for letting me vent on that. You know, it was Veterans Day, and I was like, look, guys, you can't paint with a big, wide brush about what the troops are. It's not somebody who was a high school quarterback who looks like Chris Hemsworth and is now an officer in the Marines, you know?
Right.
It's not necessarily that. Troops are multicultural, multigenerational, old and young. Let's recognize that.
Male, female,
otherwise, that's the service.
Yes, I mean, and Kareth, that's some good venting there by you.
Thank you.
That's a good vent, and a good cause to vent on, you know. So, I spoke with David West recently about some of these topics, about things that can be done in a society that, that maybe the athlete's obligation, or as he calls it, responsibility, to do certain things to help people that are less that don't have what they have, you know, people who actually need things for one reason or another. And so, Kareth, we'll just move on to David West, because he had some very interesting things to say about these, and we'll listen to him now. Thanks, Kareth. Welcome to the Warriors Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area. I'm Monty Poole, and my guest this week is David West, veteran power forward, long NBA career, distinguished NBA career, and now, after last season, an NBA champion. David, thanks for joining me.
For sure. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, I got to ask you, man, what's up with your game? I mean, the shot is there, the blocks are up. What did you eat in the off? What did you do, or what are you doing?
I don't know, man. Feeling pretty good. Changed my diet a little bit. Just really staying on top of my body, and just really relaxed. I think I've gotten in a groove in terms of just being comfortable here, and having a good familiar group. Not much has changed in terms of, the group that we had last year. We added a couple pieces, but, basically the whole, the same team is back, so we're in the same environment. Just doing what I have to do, lifting and keeping myself together.
Yeah, I talked to Steve Kerr earlier, and he said, I asked him about the same thing, and he said, I think it's just that, it's the second year in the system. He's comfortable. He knows the guys. He knows what's expected. He knows his role. I think all those things kind of are in the play there as to why he's playing so well right now, because obviously it's much easier to do this in year two the way they do things than it is in year one when it's a little new to you.
Right. Yeah. And just learning, like I said, just knowing what we are, the way we need to play in order to be successful. That familiarity is there, and just got a good comfort level. But, I'm just trying to make sure I, just stay prepped. And when I'm out there, I'm as productive as possible.
Yeah. Now, I noticed that you and Steve had a pretty long conversation today. I asked Steve, would you want to get – he said, no, I'd rather not. He said, just private, personal stuff. But for you, I got to ask you, have you always had coaches willing to just sit and talk with you for, 10, 15, 20 minutes about whatever?
I've always had that kind of repertoire, I guess, with my coaches. Mm-hmm. Obviously maybe not the same sort of, maybe not the same subject matter.
Yeah,
I've always wanted that, and I've always tried to maintain that where I've been in the NBA.
Yeah, the way Steve put it was that the thing about David is that we can talk about anything. It doesn't have to be about basketball at all. So life stuff. And so, last season we all remember how gratified you were, how satisfied you were to win a championship. Your post-game celebration after game five is legendary. We all enjoyed it, and it's going to live on. But to me, it really revealed what it all meant to you that, you worked all these years to get to that level, and here you are now at that level. And I got to tell you that, you never said this, but I think some people thought you might be ready to retire, but you obviously did not. Tell me a little bit about your summer and kind of, did you think about that at all, and just what your thought process was before you decided to come back?
I think about, you got to think about it, just about every year for these last 3 or 4 years, I guess. You always think about it as something that, you're marching toward. And so when the season was over, I took time to really enjoy what we had just done, what we had accomplished. And then just took a little time in terms of, Bob, you know, gave me, you know, he said, just let me know, you know, one way or the other, how you're feeling. And, you know, we kept a dialogue in that regard. But I just wanted to make sure that, you know, but that I still had that giddy up and that go. I wanted to make sure that I could, you know, still separate, you know, life and be able to go and play and be productive and, you know, want to have the energy or have the energy to get up and go through the everyday. And it was something that, you know, talking to a few guys, you know, the guys were like, man, you should come back and give it another run. So I knew that the guys were welcoming me back and wanted me back in the mix. And just talked to my family, and I just felt like, you know, why not? You know, we won it. Then we, you know, let's see what it's like, see what this experience is like. Defending it, and it's something that, again, you know, we got a chance to see Roger Federer. He came into our locker room in China, and one of the things that stood out to me from what he said was that he still had the fire. You know, that fire was still there to compete, and that's the one thing that's probably, you know, still burning there for me. Is like, you know, you want to compete, you want to face new challenges. And you know, when you get older, you have to figure out different ways to be productive and, you know, how to deal with these, you know, the younger, the more explosive, you know, just deal with all that. And that's a challenge that is intriguing to me to a degree. So, you know, with all that thrown in, and on top of the fact that, you know, this is just a great environment to be in, I'm learning every single day, you know, it just felt right to come on back and give it another shot.
Yeah, you know, and talking to guys over the years about retiring and how they made their decision to retire, one common thread seems to be in almost every situation, and that is they say, you know what, I'm not, if I could just play the games, I'd be all right. but it's the other stuff. It's the training camp, the practices. He goes that, and a lot of them say that that's more the issue than the actual games itself. Do you sense that?
Yeah, and I think, but that's a luxury of being in a place like this, being with a coach and people that understand that. So, you know, that's not necessarily an issue in this environment. I think that's what makes it why I'm able to, you know, to play. You know, because this environment, you know, Steve gets it, you know, and he understands that this is a long haul thing. And he understands that the way to get there, you know, has, you know, should have the players' health and the players', you know, sense of self and understanding and mental, and all the different mental stuff that we go through as athletes. And I think he gets that the environment has to make sure that it's pulling the very best out of guys. And you know, so that the idea that practice or training camp or whatever would be difficult here, or really that is the ultimate thing, that you've got to be with a coach or be with a group that understands that as you age, really, you know, in order to get the best or the most out of guys, you know, a certain type of environment needs to exist where guys are comfortable, they want to come in, and you don't get worn down. You don't have that worn down feeling throughout a long, long season.
Yeah, now I'm going to assume, you know, that last year and even this year, there will be times when he'll just basically tap you and say, you know what, don't worry about today. Or, you know, if you come in, do it on your own. Don't worry about working out. You know, do what you want to do today.
Right. Yeah, he gave me a game last week or, you know, two games ago, a game before last. And that's just a part of his, you know, his thinking. You know, we've got a very deep roster, and that, you know, we're going to have guys on, you know, throughout the year, you know, just take the night off and have an opportunity to make sure, you know, any, you know, nicks and bruises and things that, you know, that may run its course on your body throughout the course of the season, or for a lot of us, we're dealing with things that we've dealt with our whole career. And it's just making sure that you maintain that to get the most out of guys when it's time for them to be productive.
Yeah. Yeah. And you went to, as you do, it seems every summer now, you went over to Africa, and you know, talk a little bit about just Why you're, I mean, I know why you're there, but why you're there and what do you hope to accomplish and what drives you to continue that?
Well, first, I think the most important part is that, you know, making a cultural connection, mm-hmm. And getting a better understanding of, you know, just who I am and, you know, what I am and what I should represent culturally, is the first part of it. And then the second part of it is just having an impact. You know, to a large degree, Africa has been mistreated and misused and then abandoned. I feel that, you know, the knowledge and the information that I have and I've acquired over the course of my life and then in terms of my basketball career is something that I can exchange or bring to you know, young people on the continent. And I mean, basketball is a global game, but we see that the focus, the intent to teach it the right way, and not just exploit the athletes there, meaning just take the best of the best and forget about, you know, the game growing as a whole. Mm-hmm. It's something that I'm personally driven toward, in terms of just some of my personal goals. And I've just tried to continue to better and make that connection, you know, as the years go on.
How much time did you spend over there this summer?
It's usually about 10 to 12 days. Mm-hmm. And obviously because of the shortened preseason. I mean, yeah, and, you know, the shortened season and then our season going longer than, you know, everybody else's. Mm-hmm. You know, the time got condensed even further. But it's usually somewhere in those day range, usually a couple weeks.
Yeah, no. You also, we talked about this last few months back about your involvement with Zoetic, the clean energy mm-hmm. project. And, you know, I read recently something where you said that one of the things that got you started going in that direction with them was hearing about you had a relationship with a soccer player in Ghana who had passed away.
Yeah.
What happened with that?
Well, it was one of my very first trips. I met this young soccer player. He was one of their local guys, but he was up and coming. And he had a stress fracture in his foot. And what had happened was it was something that was like an ache or bruise. And in a lot of places, particularly in rural communities, you know, firing up an MRI machine requires a lot of electricity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in some places, the electricity is just not available. So he fell victim to that, not having the proper opportunity to be examined. So from his body just working to heal itself, he developed a blood clot. Well, the blood clot traveled one day, you know, up to his lungs.
Ugh.
It's an emergency situation. He goes to one hospital, and the first hospital didn't have the equipment needed to catch it, you know, mm-hmm. to halt the blood clot. It simply wasn't powered, and then they had oxygen, I believe, but the oxygen tanks weren't fully charged. So he was then rushed to a second hospital, where he ran into more complications in terms of equipment and things not being powered up because electricity is not readily available, and he died in transport to the third hospital.
Oh, my goodness.
This was a young teenage kid. I wouldn't say, I mean, young, late teenage years, but he was an up-and-coming soccer player. And the issue is that he died from something that in this country or in most other developed nations, you know, you can catch a stress fracture right away. Able to pick up on it right away. And these are some of the difficulties in countries in some rural areas in Africa. And these are things that we feel like need to be addressed. And it was through that, you know, that experience and knowing that in the back of my mind that is one of the things that pushed me into, you know, some of the projects that we're doing with Zoetic and, you know, trying to make an imprint, you know, particularly in Africa, but other regions of the world that are lacking electricity and lacking access to it.
Yeah, those of you who are unfamiliar with the term or the word Zoetic, look it up, Zoetic. It's on the internet, and you can get all the information you want about it and what it's all about. And it's good stuff. It's a great cause. Switching gears a little bit. I mean, since you know you've built a good life for yourself and your family. Your NBA career has done that for you, and you've been able to make that happen. But it does not seem at all that you've lost your connection to people who are underserved. And you know, you tell the story about what happened in Ghana and stuff. What keeps that going for you?
I think it's the bigger picture. I've accepted, you know, it's like this acceptance of the world outside of your own, and not deciding that your world and the things that are going on in your world trump or need to be made of greater importance than anyone else's. And that shouldn't change regardless of the stature or the success that you have or you reach in terms of socially and society. And so that's something that I've tried to, keep. I feel like, being understanding that the world is bigger than your world, understanding that there are people, places, and things that don't know about you, don't care about you, that should humble us every single day, right? That the world is bigger than just us.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you can, wake up every single day and do things only for yourself or things that only benefit you seems to me a very selfish way to approach life and approach the world. So I try to make sure that that I remember, that I'm a part of this larger global family, this larger body politic, and want to be someone that helps, continue to push things in the right direction for people.
And you have said in the past that you play basketball for a living, but you also play for a cause beyond yourself. And that's kind of what I'm hearing you talk about. And going back to Africa, being involved in social causes and so forth. And you sit, when you watch the NFL, I mean, obviously, we kind of know what's been going on there for over a year now. And I know you're aware of the things that have been said by various owners of the NFL. And you know where the commissioner stands in the NFL. You know what Anquan Boldin and those guys are doing on the other side in regards to what people keep calling an anthem protest, but really it's a social justice protest. People are not trying to say that the anthem is bad. They're trying to say basically that the anthem may not be true fully for all people.
Right.
And so when they stand up, that's what it's all about, trying to be heard in that regard. What's your take on the way this thing, I mean, obviously it started with Colin Kaepernick over a year ago. What's your take on just where this thing has been going over the last 13, 14, 15 months?
I think it's gone to, it's really gotten off, off track. I'll say this. I mean, Colin Kaepernick is right. Regardless of how folks try to spin what he did, or what he sort of symbolizes now, he's right.
Mm-hmm.
There are justice for everyone is not something that this nation can call its own. Justice existing, particularly for black people in the system as we see it, is not right. And we know that. We've made a plea for that, not in this current environment, but we've made that plea as long as this nation has been in existence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that he, in our time today, brought to light, and he is right. If you think about what he actually did, I don't know if you can get any more peaceful. I don't know if you can get any more meek and humble in terms of how he's presenting his argument to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that I appreciate about what his symbol stands for is there's a calmness, there's a cool, I would say, that will always surround him, Colin Kaepernick, because he has the historical record behind him. And the idea that history is the greatest or is our best, like Malcolm X said, history is qualified best to reward our research. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about a historical context and the sort of calm and peace that Colin Kaepernick represented in what he was trying to bring to life, I think having the historical record on your side brings that peace and calm. He hasn't had to raise his voice. He hasn't had to get mad or hostile or angry, even though those against him are at their most hostile, right?
Yeah.
But he has the peace and calm of being on the right side of history. And that's why I think he's such a powerful, powerful symbol. And again, I've said it in the past. I think you're upset not at what he's doing, but you know that the lessons that he's teaching are reverberating deeper than and more thoroughly than your hate. Mm-hmm. And that's what is getting folks so up in arms about him. But it's you know, he has done more in terms of what he's, who he's been able to pull out of the woodworks and really see the level of thinking that folks have in terms of race in this country, the level of misinformation and how ill-informed and uninformed people are about black people or African-American people, you know, the idea of even the patriotism, uninformed about the sacrifices that we've made and our families have made and the generations of black people that have died for this country, and to say that one group owns the patriotism or owns the right to be more to decide who's patriotic and who's not, you know, I think we can credit him for bringing all of that to life. And I don't think it'll ever go back in the dark. I mean, you know, we're in the midst of a cultural shift, because I don't think people are willing to go back into the dark ages. I don't think people are willing to go back into a time where everyone didn't appear to have a fair shot at life.
Yeah, you know, and it's, I think you're right, but, you know, as we know, the current guy in the White House is trying to drag us back into, you know,
right.
a few decades,
right.
if not a century or so, you know. And so what we're seeing, even beyond sports, is you're seeing this societal kind of conflict where you've got, you know, he's got his people over there, and then you've got the rest of society, which fortunately for us is a larger portion of society.
Is a larger portion, right.
Trying to take it in another direction and be more progressive about life and about things in this country. So it really is hard to see the day when it might go back, because there's a certain amount of enlightenment now. And what Colin has done, obviously, you know, when you point out the truth and you take a stand on that truth and you stick to your stand because it's rooted in your own principle, it does bring about a certain amount of serenity. You know, it's like
it does.
There's a certain faith to a certain peacefulness to it, because you know you're right, even if others around you are going crazy about the fact that you know you're right, because they know you're right too. They just don't want to admit it sometimes, you know.
Right.
And they don't want to see it. They don't want to be the person to say, yeah, you know what, I've been wrong. And that's why when we heard Greg Popovich say a while back that, you know, people have no idea what it means to be born, what comes with being born white, because he is basically saying that people take for granted this privilege.
And
now people are saying that they're threatened by someone who basically wants the same thing you have, equality.
Right.
So it's sad, it's thoughtful, and it's really kind of where we are right now. Are you, I wondered at times if there would be more demonstration or more overt action in the NBA in this regard. So far, you know, it's been, I mean, I realize that, yeah, you know, the NBA has a rule in place about what you should do for the anthem. I get that.
Right.
But where do you stand on the fact that, you know, the NBA has been relatively, I don't want to say quiet, but right. There's been no big stir in the NBA
right.
about this issue.
Well, I think one of the things is that I think for us, we dealt with Donald Sterling. And as a player group, as a group of players, we were very outspoken about that. And we stated our claim in terms of where we were going to position ourselves on issues like this. The one thing that I've noticed, or I feel is like Colin Kaepernick, was the symbol, is the symbol. There have been other guys throughout their league that have done it. Mm-hmm. From our standpoint, particularly we talked about it as a team, is we feel like he's done what needed to be done in terms of highlighting it. Now it's on us to go out and do work, mm-hmm. To continue to champion not only his message, but to support justice for everyone in this country. To be a part of the solutions that need to be in place, to be a part of educating our young people, to know exactly who they are and what they need to be and train them to understand what they're facing. It's about moving toward action. It's about making sure that you're a part of organizations or that you're doing things to impact the lives of people who don't have equal opportunity and equal justice and protection under the law, right? Sort of having our eye out for the most vulnerable of our citizens, I think, is where folks' understanding is moving. Mm-hmm. And that's something that a lot of people in power in particular aren't necessarily a part of that wave, but we've got to continue to move on. I think he sort of set the standard. Kaepernick and the NFL, those guys have taken that symbolism and run with it. I think it's been co-opted. I think people have tried to change the narrative and shift the narrative and focus it on the anthem. We don't want to be a part of that. We want to be a part of the work. I think that's what, you know, for a lot of us, we do grassroots work on a daily basis. We do grassroots work that we know we're having an impact on young people, and we've sort of continued in that move. I don't know if I've ever been compelled to kneel, me personally. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've had the awareness of what we're actually dealing with. You know, when Donald Sterling issue was out on the NBA table, I thought the players, I thought we dealt with that as best you could. I thought everybody was as outspoken as they needed to be. And so I don't think there's ever been like this this feeling from us to sort of co-opt, you know, what Kaepernick has done, what Colin has done, and, you know, the great symbol that he is going to be, not only for us now, but for generations to come.
Yeah. Before I leave, I got to bring this one more thing up, is that, you know, I did a piece, wrote a piece a couple weeks ago that had nothing to do with basketball. It had to do with NFL and NFL owners and how, mm-hmm. you know, these guys kind of have drawn a line in the sand, basically saying that, you know, this is our game and we're going to do what we have to do to protect it and right. keep it the way it is because we are the bosses around here. And my thing was that, you know what, these owners, if they had really wanted to avoid this PR nightmare of a season that they've had, they could have done this a long time ago, but they could still do it. And that is, they could take steps on their own to dedicate themselves to doing things that might help society, not football. You know, put your money and your power and your influence in action to help the kind of people that Colin Kaepernick is talking about helping. And let him know, let him know, and let others know that, okay, you know what? Yeah, we don't like the fact that you're, you know, maybe kneeling for the anthem and, you know, it may be affecting our business and all this stuff, but we hear what you're saying. So we're going to do something about it. And so I feel like in the NBA, people are taking more steps to actually do things than they have been in the NFL. And the Sterling thing kind of tells me that NBA players feel more empowered than NFL players feel. And that's kind of what I'm seeing. So
I don't know. I don't know about – I can't speak for them. I just know that we there's this understanding, like, we have this this responsibility. And I know years ago folks said we're not supposed to be or we're not role models. But because we've achieved certain levels of success and because – the limelight is on us to a degree that it's not on other people. We have a responsibility to be responsible in that light. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's the underbelly of all of this. And I think Colin has really answered the call in that regard, right? Is he knows the type of light that he's under. He knows the type of spotlight that professional sports brings. And so under that light, what are you projecting or what are you showing the young people that you know are looking up to you? Honestly, you know, as was the case with some of these NFL owners, they don't care. They just don't care. They care about their business. But the one part that I think is really being overlooked and is being dismissed is the impact of them not hiring or getting Colin Kaepernick in the league. Now, we know he should be on somebody's roster. But what they're sort of discounting is the fact that people aren't watching the NFL because of the way they're treating Colin Kaepernick. That is a real thing.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who stop watching football, who are not going to games. I know a bunch of people that literally, these are business professionals, these are people who were diehard Redskins fans. I'm talking about black folk in D.C. Mm-hmm. in numbers, mm-hmm. are mm-hmm. not supporting the NFL because they have not given Colin Kaepernick a shot.
Right.
And I think that idea is not being talked about enough. I think it's the other way around. They're saying, well, people aren't supporting the NFL because guys are protesting. I'm not sure that the numbers, if we really, really look at who's watching and who's not going and different things like that, I'm not sure that those numbers are the way that they are projecting them to be.
Yeah,
in my opinion. I think there are a lot of people who aren't watching because of the way Colin Kaepernick is being treated.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. They have alienated a segment of the fan base. And a lot of these people you're talking about, they may not even be big fans of Colin Kaepernick himself. But they understand they understand what he's trying to do, and they see the treatment he is getting, and they're repulsed by that. So it's like, really? This is what you guys are going to do about this guy? You know, just going to basically write him off, you know, and bring in all these guys that we know haven't thrown a pass in years and haven't done this, haven't been in the league and all this, and have done nothing when they were in the league? That's what they are doing right now, and my best guess, my fear, is that they're going to continue to do that. And hopefully someday soon there will be some sort of resolution here. But, man, oh, man, it's hard to be hopeful about this anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, David West, Golden State Warriors, a man of means, a man of letters, and he has been our guest on the Warriors Insider Podcast. David, man, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, man.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.